Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back to Double Indemnity, the podcast.
Welcome back. I'm Jonathan Pyle.
I'm Emily Glazer. Here we like to talk about new movie. The words did not happen. We like to talk about new movie releases and we review them.
Explain our thoughts.
For fun, hobby. We like movies. We like talking about it. So we've decided to force other people to listen to us talk about it.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. So everybody, just a couple intros to the podcast. There are going to be a lot of spoilers. We're going to talk about the whole movie pretty much. Also, remember to follow us on Letterboxd. We post the movie before we talk about it. It is DI underscore podcast. Did anybody comment on it?
Ooh.
I don't know.
I don't think
we should
so.
Really check this before we start the podcast.
We really so should. Unprepared. We are terrible at this.
Let's just jump right on in, Darnden. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good.
Little update for everybody. I just got back from being home in our hometown in South Carolina, and I got back at 1 a.m. South Dakota time, which is 2 a.m. South Carolina time. And then I went to work today, so I got like 4 hours of sleep. And Jonathan is a sweetheart, and he stayed up until I got home because I had a long drive. So he got about the same amount of sleep as me, too. So just be prepared for us to be like really delusional. We're completely out of it. I'm not
yes,
gonna lie.
Yeah.
And this is like the movie we chose for today is very much something you kind of like need to be mentally there for.
Yeah, that's
so,
true.
So, you know, please forgive us. Our dog is so bumbly. There we go. Maybe she settled. I don't think she settled.
I doubt it.
So first segment of the podcast is what are we watching right now? Now, I do want to say, because we were apart this past weekend, we were not watching things together.
No. Not at all.
I didn't watch a lot of TV because I was home with my family, so I was doing things with them. But on the airplane, I did watch The Wedding Date, which is a classic rom-com. 10 out of 10. Highly enjoyed it.
How many stars? 5 stars?
5 stars. 100%. We already reviewed that in our Ranking the Best Rom-Coms
podcast
with my mom and my sister. So if you want to know how we feel about it, you can go watch that podcast.
Go watch that one. I did not watch anything like that.
Did you watch anything while I was gone? I can't imagine you didn't watch
anything. Well, yeah, I watched The Second Extraction.
How was that?
It was what I expected.
Did he extract something?
Oh, yeah.
Is it people or what is he extracting?
It's people, yes.
Okay, just curious, you know. You never know.
That's true. It could be anything. It could be blood, you know.
I don't really think they say extract blood.
What is something they say extract for?
Oh, like...
Diamonds?
I don't think so. Poops? No.
Extract.
I don't know. Oh, like vanilla extract.
From so a beaver's butthole.
They extract flavoring, I guess.
That's true.
Extract value. Now the word means nothing.
That's true.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Extraction.
I watched that. I watched Transformers Age of Extinction, which is just such a stupid movie, but I love Stanley Tucci. He's great in like everything he does.
I don't know what that movie is. I know what Transformers is.
You yeah. said that like you were so proud of yourself.
Yeah.
I know what Transformers is. and then I watched a lot of Barry, the show on Max.
Barry.
It's so good. It's hilarious.
It
highly
just doesn't
recommend.
Seem, like the synopsis of it just doesn't seem interesting. I bet you it's good, but I wasn't interested enough to be like, ooh, I want to watch it.
Yeah, I just gave it a shot.
I mean, if you like it, I'd probably like it. Actually, that's not true. There's lots of things you like that I don't like.
That's very accurate.
All right. Well, do you want to intro the podcast?
Yes. The movie is Asteroid City. Didn't see that one coming.
Not like we'd say what it's going to be beforehand or anything.
Of course, directed by Wes Anderson. He's done a lot of movies. Not going to lie.
Yeah.
Grand Budapest Hotel, Moonrise Kingdom, Isle of Dogs, The French Dispatch, Fantastic Mr. Fox, The Darjeeling Limited. That's a hard word to say.
Mm-hmm.
Royal Tenenbaums, The Life Aquatic, Rushmore, Bottle Rocket. Yeah.
Done a lot of stuff.
The plot follows a writer on his world-famous fictional play about a grieving father who travels with his tech-obsessed family to a small, rural asteroid city to compete in a junior stargazing event, only to have this worldview disrupted forever.
Forever.
It's really dramatic.
What's up from IMDb or Letterboxd?
IMDb. I always get the synopses from IMDb.
I feel like you used to get them from Letterboxd, though.
I do it from IMDb because I can just quick copy it. You can't do that on Letterboxd.
You are so lazy. Why don't you write your own synopsis, Jonathan?
That's a lot of work. It's all about efficiency.
Do you remember when Jonathan, when we first met, told me that he at one point wanted to be a movie critic? And you can't even write a synopsis of a movie?
No, I could if I wanted.
Okay, give me your own synopsis of this movie.
Wait, wait,
right
put
now,
me on the spot.
On the spot. Give it to me.
I don't know.
No, speed. You can't think. You have to just go.
What it is.
Talk. Go.
It's a family that goes to the desert during a science competition.
Yeah.
And then,
go.
And then they discover something that
keep going.
Changes their viewpoint on the world.
Yeah. Yes. More.
More. And it's a really, really cute town.
I don't think that's something people say in a synopsis. It takes place in the cutest of little towns you've ever darn
seen. Cutest little towns. There's lots of little sad characters. There's the main characters.
And then there's side
characters.
The
rising action, the climax, and then the falling action, as it typically, a story typically goes.
But it was special in this case, right?
Yeah, obviously.
Because it was just such a darn cute town.
Makes all the difference. Anyway, yeah, you can quote me on that verbatim.
Okay, give me the cast.
You ready for this? I'm not going to say who they're
playing.
Don't
say everybody, honestly. Like, there's really no point.
Jason Schwartzman. I'm not going to say who they're playing.
Why?
Because there's so many people.
It's also, there's so many actors who had two characters. You know? Because they had the...
What? What are you talking about?
The actor
had
two characters.
Yes,
yeah.
True. I was like, what? There weren't any double characters. Jason Schwartzman.
Beans has a split end on one of her whiskers.
I know. I noticed that too.
Beans,
she's got
you
several.
Should really take better care of yourself. You're really letting yourself go, sweetie.
Maybe we should need to give her a bath. Maybe that's why.
No, she's okay. Carry on. Sorry.
Scarlett Johansson in her first Wes Anderson film, I think.
Which is interesting because Wes Anderson usually likes to repeat his actors.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Yes, indeed. Oh, wait, no. She was in Isle of Dogs. I take it back. False information. Misinformation. Tom Hanks in his first Wes Anderson movie, maybe.
I feel like he's been in one before.
I feel like he hasn't. I'm looking. I don't see any.
Okay. So first Wes Anderson movie.
Nice. Jeffrey Wright, Tilda Swinton, Bryan Cranston as the host of the theater.
My favorite was Steve Carell.
I know, me too.
He was
legit.
A motel manager.
Supposed to be Bill Murray.
Oh, yeah.
This is the one movie that Wes Anderson has done that Bill Murray hasn't been in.
Why isn't he in it?
Yeah, COVID.
Oh, yeah. They did say they were making this during COVID.
Yep. And this is actually the second time Carroll has taken over a role for Murray, as Murray was the first choice for the role of Frank in Little Miss Sunshine.
Oh, Carroll was better for that, though.
Yeah.
I think for both of these roles, I think he was perfect for them. I think it worked out well.
You got Adrian Brody, Maya Hawke, Willem Dafoe, Margot Robbie.
Found out Maya Hawke was Ethan Hawke in Uma Thurman's yeah. kid, I was mind blown because she looks so much like them, but I hadn't thought about it.
I know.
I was like, whoa. I literally was reading an article and they were like, is Maya Hawke the kid of Tony Hawk? And I'm like, what? I would never have thought that. I totally thought Ethan Hawke.
I would never have thought that.
I know. It's funny. Tony Hawk.
And then Jeff Goldblum as the extraterrestrial.
What was funny about it, though, is as I was reading the article, after the header of is Maya Hawke the daughter of Tony Hawk, under it goes, she has never disclosed her parental lineage. And I'm like, I think it's very obvious that she is their child. There are literally so many pictures of them together in public.
And she looks so much like them.
Yeah. Well, she actively never has denied to say who her parents are. Do you know what I mean?
Who are your parents?
Weird. Who are your parents? Beans, who are your parents?
Also, Hong Chau is in the...
Beans!
Ow.
Okay, what were you saying?
Hong Chau was in this movie. Didn't really catch
who
her.
Who was she?
She was Polly Green. I don't remember.
I don't remember that part, but I love her.
And then, what was I going to say?
You didn't tell me.
That's probably why.
There were just a lot of people. A lot of people.
As expected.
He's always got big casts.
I give this movie a solid. Oh, wait. Guess what the budget was?
$50 million.
$25 million.
Really? It's pretty low.
It's crazy what he can do with that kind of budget.
He really only has one set, though, you know?
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, and he doesn't do, like, extreme CGI normally or anything, so that keeps the budget down.
Yeah.
And he uses, you know, cheap, unknown actors.
Yeah, right. I don't think any of them are wanting a big payout when they go.
When you do Wes Anderson, like, it's to do Wes Anderson. I wonder how much, if they do get paid a lot, you know?
And it's made $9 million so far, which is a record for Wes Anderson.
That's really good for him.
For an opening weekend, yeah.
How much does he normally make on an opening weekend?
Not that much.
Really? I guess his movies are super niche.
They are very niche, but he has a huge following. Like,
yeah.
One of the biggest on Letterboxd.
Oh, 100%. He's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like people who use Letterboxd are the kind of people who know who Wes Anderson is. Or like who?
Yes,
like,
yeah.
Even if they don't know who Wes Anderson is, they're like the kind of people who know directors and stuff and follow that kind of stuff. If they're going to use an app where you track your movies, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So, what would you rate this movie?
Four to five.
I'd give it a 4.5.
4.5.
I thought it was so cute, so well executed. I have some notes of things I want to get into, so I won't start spewing because then I'll get really confused. There is a fly in our house, so if you see our dog flying or if the camera hits the ground, it's because she's like literally jumping at it. It's
been driving her crazy all weekend.
Yeah. So first off, let's just talk about Wes Anderson and how much I love him. I actually have no idea what he looks like. I've never seen a picture of
him. You don't know what he looks like?
I have no idea what he looks like, but I do want to say that Jonathan and I, we both owe our entire relationship to Wes Anderson because on our first date, we were talking about movies. I didn't know he was a movie buff. I'm not a movie buff, but I come from a family that loves going to the movies and like, my family knows way more about movies than I do, but I love going to the movies. And my favorite director was Wes Anderson. And my favorite movie is Moonrise Kingdom. And I remember on our first date, you asked me that. And I told you that. And I guess you told me later that you thought it was like cool or interesting that I knew who Wes Anderson was. Mm-hmm. And like he's my favorite director or something. So like just saying, you know, that was how I really won him over.
It's true.
Was it love at first movie discussion?
Probably. This is what he looks like.
You know, that's what I feel like he would look like. Yeah.
Here's the...
Are you really showing the camera? I can edit a picture in there of him.
Well, that looked a lot better than what you could do.
It's way better quality than so I do. It is kind of special to me, Wes Anderson, because it was like a big part of our first day was talking about movies and stuff. And I will say, I feel like every single one of his movies gets more and more rigid and like stiff.
Like, this is the most Wes Anderson has ever been. Like
the most Wes that Wes has ever been.
Yeah, literally. I know.
Literally. Like his dialogue is so dry. It's so like unemotional. Like people don't react to really anything that happens. Like crazy things happen and the people are like, And they just, okay. That's good. Yeah, okay. That's what it is. And also, I feel like his movies are like in 2D almost.
Yeah.
They feel so flat, but flat in a good way that it's like, it almost looks like you're watching like a puppet show or like a paper. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like the paper dolls.
Yeah.
It looks like a paper dolls or something like moving around on the screen. And I do wonder like what his inspiration is. Like, is he trying to embody something? Like, how did he even come up with this style? Because it's so unique. Like, you never see it.
What
I mean? Like, if you see it, you know it's him. And there's a whole trend online of making videos Wes Anderson style. Have you seen that?
Yeah, he said he was really tired of that.
He doesn't like it?
He doesn't like it.
Because people do a crappy job. I see people try to do Wes Anderson stuff. I'm like, that is not.
Yeah.
That is not. Really? So what did he say about it? It bothered him?
Oh, I don't remember exactly what he said, but...
I mean, maybe that's why this movie did so well, though, because his name has been, like, in social media recently.
Yeah, maybe.
And then people were like, oh, this is a Wes Anderson. All publicity. Let's go watch it.
Is good publicity.
Yeah, I don't think that's true.
Yeah, no, me either.
Like, if somebody is accused of, like, sexual abuse, that is not good publicity.
No, Jonathan Majors, no.
Mm-mm.
Not at all.
No, thank you. We don't want that kind of publicity. That is not the good stuff. Okay. But yeah, I was looking it up online, and according to cinemablend.com, this movie is a film about grief and a human reaction to trauma. And I'm like, you know what? It's actually really smart. Because I was like so brain dead today at work. I was like, I can't think of any symbolism. So I Googled it. And Cinema Blend, that's pretty deep stuff. I think it really is. Like all of these people, they're put in a situation where like they can't control anything. They're going through crappy stuff in their lives. They have like a crappy career, or they lost their wife, and they all come together in this one place and something terrible happens to them and they're stuck there. And it just kind of shows how different people react to things.
Yeah, they're just forced to exist with that feeling, you know?
Yeah, literally.
With other people who are sharing that same feeling.
I know. And one of the symbolisms I saw was like, it's like what, no matter what happens to you in life, like you have to just deal with it and move on. Like even if it doesn't make sense to you, you just gotta take it and like keep working forward, even if not something's inexplainable, you know?
That's good. That's good.
Yeah, good stuff. But I will say Wes Anderson is one of the few people who can make a movie about nothing and it's still entertaining. Like, it's like so weird. The plot lines in these movies don't move like normal movies. There's no climax in his movies normally.
Yeah, not really.
Like, it's just like, it's just a story that he tells you, and you kind of watch people do stuff and it doesn't climax. There's no downfall. There's no like, the couple in love breaks up and you want them to get back together. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's none of that.
But yet it still
emotional.
Works.
It's still so emotional.
Yeah.
Like, I got teary-eyed at one part.
Oh, really?
I'll tell you what it is. I'll tell you what it is. Big surprise. You got to wait.
Big surprise.
Big surprise. Big surprise. I was worried that this movie wasn't going to be good, though, because recently his movies have been getting a little bit crazier every time, you know? Like, The French Dispatch was so off the wall. There were way too many storylines, in my opinion. Some of them were super boring, and a lot of it didn't make any sense to me.
I didn't love it. Yeah, I thought, yeah, the multiple storylines just didn't allow you to emotionally connect with the characters.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Like, you were just trying to keep up with what was going on to everybody. And so I was really worried this movie was going to be like that. And my family loves Western culture. Like, we love Arizona vibes. My sister literally got married in Tucson, Arizona, and like everybody had cowboy hats, cowboy boots. Like, we love cowboy culture, and like Western movies and Western music and stuff like that. So I was really, really excited about this, but then I was apprehensive because I was like, oh my gosh, I love this style of movie, but Wes Anderson's gone a little crazy recently, and I didn't know how, like, you know, crazy he was gonna get with it.
Blend.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's like Christopher Nolan. Every movie of his now gets more confusing and more confusing each time. Like Tenet, what the dunk? You know, like The Prestige. Oh, I get it. Kind of confusing. Or like Inception, yeah, it's a little bit more confusing. And then you get to Tenet, it's like, what is going on? So hopefully Oppenheimer, he's relaxes.
Oh,
a
I think
bit.
He's scaling back.
I feel like isn't Oppenheimer kind of like a more realistic story? Like, isn't he kind of telling like a real story versus like coming up with like a mind melding story?
Precisely.
We'll see, but we get to review that one really soon. So gonna find it.
I'm very excited for it.
Crazy.
Apparently the color scenes in the movie are subjective, and then
subjective
are like there's black and white and color scenes in Oppenheimer, and the black and white is from Oppenheimer's like point of view, and the colored ones are
is Oppenheimer a person?
Objective. Yeah.
What do you mean by objective then?
It's like from his point of view, subjective.
Does he see? Is he like colorblind on the grayscale or something?
No. This is just everything through his eyes, so it could be like different than what actually happened. I don't know. Just what I heard.
Oh, no. Oh, no. It does not sound like that's going to go well. I feel like I'm going to be so confused the whole time. Oh, my gosh.
Just expand your mind.
Yes. I will say, though, thank you to my family for coming to see this movie with me for a second time, because I went home and I really wanted to see it, and they had all already seen it. And they all came again to see it again with me. Now, I think they wanted to see it again, but it still was like, thank you for doing that. That was sweet. So, Are you ready to get into the plot? Those were my like initial brain, like what would you call it? I almost called it a brain fart. I meant word vomit. That's my initial word vomit that I have.
Brain vomit. Word vomit.
Yes, exactly.
Fart vomit.
Okay, so Wes Anderson, of course, loves to do the two storylines. He likes to have multiple things going on in different people's lives in circumstances that seem completely unrelated to each other. Like, that is just his thing.
Yes.
So sure. That is kind of what goes on throughout the whole movie, and you kind of got to keep up with it. So there was like the, basically the idea was there was a playwright who wrote a play that was being screened on television. And so there was the black and white section, which is when they're showing you the playwright and all the actors and what went into writing the play and producing the play. And then everything that's in color is like actually in the play, like you are experiencing it. So that was like the two, there's the black and white and the color. And I don't know exactly why, do you know why he chose to do black and white for the playwright versus color?
I don't know. I kind of like the stylistic choice.
Yeah, I guess you kind of always feel like things in the movies are like more exciting, more vibrant than real life.
Yeah.
Then, and I guess the black and white of real life is like mundane in comparison.
Mundane and dull.
Yeah. I don't know.
I like that interpretation.
That's what I would think of it as an interpretation, but I'm probably wrong because every time I interpreted something in English class, I was wrong.
Yeah, that's true.
Which made me hate English.
Just go deeper.
I know. Whatever. That's what she said.
Yikes.
Okay, so yeah, they pretty much kind of introduce it with like a television host telling you about the play and blah blah blah, and the guy who wrote the play, his name is Conrad Earp. I don't know how to say his last name. But basically the play is about a bunch of people who come to the middle of nowhere in the desert to a town called Asteroid City. Because all of their kids are competing in like a whatchamacallit?
Science.
Stargazing competition for smart kids who like invent really smart kid things.
Brainiacs.
So the first character that they introduce is a war photographer named Augie, and he gets there early. He is with his super smart genius son Woodrow, and then he has three little girls, daughters.
They are adorable.
They were so cute. All of their lines were executed perfectly. I literally thought they were the best part of the movie too.
Yeah.
I literally wrote right here, these little girls made the movie. That's so funny. They were so good. They were casted so well. They were so cute. They actually looked like little sisters. Like, it was, oh yeah, I love them. It's kind of like in Brave, you know, the little bears.
Yes, the little bears were the best.
They were the best part of Brave.
That's so true. Mm-hmm. The rest of the movie Brave is kind of shit, but the bears.
That's why I like the movie Brave. Yes. Is because of the bears.
You get it.
So, pretty much Augie's car had actually broken down, but thankfully they were already in
the city. I know,
that
kind of worked out.
How ironic.
Pretty well.
So Hank the mechanic tries to fix it. This was like a funny little quirky scene. And it didn't really go well. They didn't fix the car pretty
also,
much.
Also, there's a movie called, sorry, this is very random. There's a movie called The House That Jack Built, and it starred Matt Dillon as the mechanic, Hank, as a serial killer who poses as a mechanic. And so seeing him in a movie where he plays another mechanic was a little disheartening.
And his name is Hank. His name was Hank in this movie too.
The house that Jack built. Sorry. Did I say Hank?
Yeah, you literally said his name was Hank. And I was like, they must have done it on purpose. I will say his character was too lively. Nobody is lively in a Wes Anderson film. And he was lively. He felt real. He was talking like a normal human. And I was like, you can't do that, sir. You need to be a little more stiff.
A little more stoicism.
What does that mean?
Like to be stoic.
I don't know what stoic means.
It's like to be like confident, but also reserved and like brave at the same time.
I don't think that's at all what he needed to be. I think he needed to be more stiff.
Anyway, don't watch The House That Jack Built. That movie is extremely screwed up.
Oh, okay. Well, noted.
But it's kind of hilarious, but it's really screwed up. That's all I'm going to say about it.
So next, Augie calls his father-in-law because the car broke down. He's got three daughters and his son. He's got to do the competition. He's like, can you please come help me take care of the children? And this is when you find out that Augie's wife actually died recently, and Augie hasn't told his children, and it's been 3 weeks. 3 weeks. I don't understand why the kids weren't asking questions like, where is mother?
They're just like, oh, yeah, she went to the store.
For 3 weeks.
She needed a lot of things.
Oh, my gosh. So, yeah, pretty much the father-in-law convinces him, like, hey, you need to tell the kids your mom died. So, Augie sits down with the kids and has the most awkward conversation where he tells them that their mother has passed really away. Funny. And then they go into the diner to get some food, and they run into Midge Campbell, who is like this super famous Gorgo girl, i.e. Scarlett Johansson. And they kind of get talking, they get chit-chatting. He takes a picture of her. They have an awkward conversation, but yet somehow there's chemistry there.
Always.
Mm-hmm. Basically, this is when they kind of introduce two love stories. So the two parents, Augie and Midge, actually end up, you know, going a little crazy. Really kind of like having a thing for each other the whole time. Whew. And then their children, their own children, Woodrow and Dinah, I don't know how to say her name.
Yeah, something like that.
But they were both two of the genius kids competing in the competition. They fell in love with each other too, which I thought was kind of weird that like two parents fall in love and then their children fall in love. That's like kind of feels like incestuous. Is that a word?
Yes.
It feels incestuous, but it's not technically, but because
it
they,
feels like it.
It feels like
what
it.
What feels incestuous?
Why no. are you touching my leg?
What feel? I don't know.
Do you know what I mean? Emotional feeling. Do you not have feelings?
None.
I guess that's why you're so confused about it then. So, yeah. So I really liked what they did with Augie and Midge and their love story. So they basically like talk to each other through their windows in their houses because their little huts are right next to each other.
It's really romantic.
So they're like talking through the windows and they have these weird conversations where they seem like they don't understand each other. They don't get each other. They think each other is weird, but then they relate on this weird level of like, we're both miserable people.
Yes.
Like we both hate our lives. We're both going through some crappy shit right now. Like let's be besties.
Might as well. Yeah. Also throughout like the whole movie, it was apparently like really hot. Nobody ever looked hot in the movie. You know what I mean?
Sweaty. Yeah. Yeah, no. Well, they also in pristine. In the desert, you don't sweat a lot because it's so dry.
I guess that's true.
Yeah. So joke's on you.
Well, I've sweat in the desert before that was dry. So.
But you're a really sweaty person.
I'm an exception to that rule.
You're an exception to the rule. Yeah. So basically, all the other people arrive to the event. They're going to be part of the convention. So there's a general, there's an astronomer lady, there's other children competing. There's also a bunch of school children and their teacher, June, who's played by Maya Hawke. And then there's also a gang of cowboys. The lead singer, Montana, which is a good name for like a cowboy.
Oh, for sure.
It's a really good name for a cowboy.
That actor really looks like Orlando Bloom, but it's not Orlando Bloom.
It doesn't look anything like Orlando Bloom.
Are you kidding me? They look so alike.
I don't think he looks
like Rupert Friend and Orlando Bloom. I'm looking this up. Continue with what you were saying.
What I thought was weird. Beans. What are you doing, Beans? What I thought was weird is when I was reading through the like synopsis to try to help me write up my notes, they said that there was a motel manager and that the whole team of everybody was being monitored by a team of covert agents. I didn't pick that part up. There were spies, covert agents.
There was that the guy in the suit with the glasses that was always kind of like peering in scenes and not saying anything.
I don't remember that.
You remember that?
No. But why would there be a covert agent?
So that nobody would know who he was.
Are you saying the only reason there would be to be a covert agent is so people don't know your identity? Just don't tell them who you are.
But what if they ask?
Just say, hey, my name's Greg.
Greg?
From Montana.
Gotta, gotta break some Gregs to make a tomlet.
Oh, yeah, from...
Come on, they look so alike.
They don't.
That what?
They don't, but other people made collages, so they must have thought so.
Come on.
They look nothing alike, Jonathan.
You are ridiculous if you can't see that.
I can see that they are not look alike. They do not look like you. Who really looks alike is Matt Damon and
Mark Wahlberg.
Mark Wahlberg. They look so much alike. How can you get those
mixed up, though?
Okay, well, how could you get those guys mixed up?
Because they look alike.
I know the difference between them now.
Now you do.
Yes, but it took me a while. Now that I've
educated you otherwise.
No, I'm talking about Mark Wahlberg and Matt Damon. Is this because I studied super hard? I had flashcards and everything.
I can't believe Mark Wahlberg sang Good Vibrations. That's crazy.
I know. I had no idea he was a singer.
Me either.
It's so funny. So back to the town. The town has like a big crater made from a meteor.
It's an asteroid.
And they do all of their ceremonies inside of the crater, which is weird. They like climb down ladders to get down there. And it reminds me a lot of Arizona because... there is Meteor Crater in Arizona, which is from like a actual meteor that smashed into the earth.
Not together on separate occasions.
I have been there, but it's cool. They have like the meteor out and you can touch it. I was under the impression, like they told me that was the real meteor and like you're allowed to touch it. But then I was like, there's no way this was actually in space. Like, I feel like they're lying. I feel like this is just a replica of it.
Yeah, probably.
But they literally, I swear they said that this is the meteor. And I was like, and I feel like they said that was in space. You're touching something that was in space. You know what I mean?
Maybe.
Technically, everything on the planet was in space. Is yes, in space.
We are.
I'm
in
touching space.
Space
right now, everybody. I don't need to touch something from space. We're in space. I am space. You are space, Beans.
You take up. Stop taking so up much space. Space.
Okay, so they have a little welcome ceremony to get everybody welcome to the big convention where they're gonna. You know, win the awards for all their little inventions that the kiddos made. But during the ceremony, a UFO shows up. And I was not expecting this. I did not think this was going to turn into an alien thing. But a UFO shows up and steals the meteor that made the crater. And everybody just sits there. Like, nobody reacts. Nobody cares. And it was a cute really little like alien.
That. It's the best alien design since Chicken Little.
It's... Oh my god, the Chicken Little aliens are so cute. Cute
with the little fur balls and the little feet,
and they make them all like they're so scary. I but know. They're the cutest things in the world.
That was my Letterboxd review. I thought it was pretty good.
That is a good review. You've been waiting to say that this whole time.
I have.
Oh my gosh, it was cute. It was very, I couldn't tell if it was animated or if it was stop motion.
I couldn't tell either.
But it was super cute. At first, I was so weirded out by it, but I loved it. I thought it was great.
And it's Jeff Goldblum. That makes it even better.
I know. Ooh. But what's funny is like it didn't have any lines.
It grunted at one
point. It just, there was, I remember, yeah, I literally remember hearing the grunt and I was like, that's Jeff Goldblum's that's Jeff grunt. That was so funny.
You've peaked.
I literally remember seeing on the intro credits, they said Jeff Goldblum is the alien. I was like, whoa. And then when the alien came out two times and he didn't say anything, I was like, what the heck? Did he literally just grunt?
Well, he said
time?
Something at the end, but he wasn't in character.
Yeah, he,
was... he
said something later on, yeah. But I at first I was like, is this really all that we're going to get from Jeff Goldblum for the movie? So yeah, when the alien shows up, Augie takes a picture of it and everybody's so chill. Like nobody's freaked out. Nobody's upset
Everybody
about it. They're
there.
Just like, cool. This is just life now. This is it. And so after that, the military pretty much like shuts down the whole city. They're like, you're not going anywhere. You're under quarantine. I actually saw online that they were inspired for the quarantine because they wrote this during COVID.
They wrote this during COVID.
Yeah.
That makes
sense.
They said
like if it wasn't during COVID, they probably wouldn't have quarantined the town.
That's pretty
in
crazy.
The storyline. Yeah.
Dang.
Do you not have any fun facts? I'm over here pulling out all
Sorry,
fun facts.
Sorry, I was literally like thinking, I was like, I feel like I usually have fun facts.
Do you?
Yeah, I do.
Fun fact.
When Montana walks around, you can hear the sound of spurs, even though he's not wearing any.
That's intentional, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very intentional.
Because it makes it seem like a cheap like TV play, you know, mm-hmm. with the fake audio.
I like that.
But I really like that. That's funny. You would think it would, in any other movie, if it wasn't a Wes Anderson movie, you'd be like,
of
continuity,
course.
You know, like there's no spurs on his shoes. But when it's Wes Anderson, we're like, oh my God, the symbolism
it is
so
deep.
Deep.
That's so accurate. Also another fun fact, Bryan Cranston Cranston, said the filming of this movie was very familial, where the actors would have nightly banquets. He referred to it as fulfilling an actor's dream camp.
Banquets are just like hangouts. When you say banquet, I think like...
Well, probably just hangouts.
Why would you call it a banquet?
Well, he said nightly banquets.
That's so cute.
He said filming this movie was not easy.
We should have a banquet tonight.
Oh, let's just do it.
Why not every night?
Every night, let's have a banquet. We need a big chandelier.
Why do you need a chandelier?
Everybody.
We have a ceiling fan.
A chandelier is a necessity in a banquet. It's just common knowledge.
I think a banquet requires like you have to have tables with white tablecloths and fancy silverware and dishes, but like they're cheap, you know what I mean? And the only drink option is sweet tea.
Yeah.
If you're from the South, God, you know what we're talking about.
And if you don't like sweet tea, then you're just screwed.
I know, then you're so thirsty. I'm like, why can't I have water?
We don't serve water here.
They only had sweet tea. It was so weird. Ugh, at all the banquets growing up.
I don't miss that, man.
Because I went to so many banquets.
You were the banquet gal.
Oh, yeah.
People just lining up to take you to banquets.
Yup. So the town is under military quarantine. They're doing medical tests on everybody. Montana the cowboy and June, the children's teacher, are falling in love. But I'm not going to lie, I felt no chemistry between them.
I felt
them.
The chemistry. Come
I
on.
I felt no chemistry.
You could slice it with a knife.
What? I don't get it.
You could slice the tension with a knife.
But when you say you can slice the chemistry, that doesn't make sense. You can't slice an atom, Jonathan. It's the smallest form of matter.
Well, do you know what happens when you slice an atom?
What?
You get two atoms.
No, because you can't slice an atom.
But if you could.
But you can't. John. Oh, I get it.
It's hypothetical.
This is theoretical physics, isn't it?
Exactly. I'm glad you found
it. What was it that we used to say? Something about physics? That there was something, one of the podcasts physics? Where we said something about like theoretical physics or something. We just kept using it as like an excuse for everything.
What movie was that for?
I'm trying to remember what it was we were saying. It was like,
God, you're right. That's going to drive me crazy.
Because I remember you said it and I was like, that doesn't sound real. I don't know. It's probably going to come to us in the middle of the night. We're going to sit up and be like, oh my God, that's what it is. And so also the Smarty Pants kiddos find a way to leak the news about the aliens. And the town becomes a tourist attraction and it's surrounded by people who decided to bring a Ferris wheel and carnival games to the outside of a quarantine town.
Did you say a Ferris wheel?
Or a Ferris wheel. I feel like everybody does that. I feel like everybody confuses a Ferris wheel and a Ferris wheel. Carousel.
I was like, what is a Ferris wheel?
A Ferris. But doesn't it sound right?
No, it doesn't.
Okay, what are they? Say the two of them. Really quick.
Carousel, Ferris wheel.
What about a Ferris wheel?
A Ferrisel.
A carousel? Wait, what was I saying before?
Ferris wheel.
I'm so sorry. Whatever. Okay, they're confusing. One turns on like a perpendicular axis and one is parallel.
Physics.
Yeah, on the x-axis, y-axis, z-axis. Enter 4D space. No, I don't know what I'm talking about. Beans is groaning.
Beans is really
She's
annoying.
Really groaning. Okay. So, the events in Asteroid City become national news, and the general, who is the head of everything going on there, moves to end the quarantine. He wants it over with, but when he decides he's going to declare the emergency is over, everybody meets up in the crater, as one does. And the UFO comes back the second he's about to announce it. So he's like, are you freaking kidding me? And the... what's his face? Alien just drops the meteor off and he leaves. And he put like some writing on it. So they were like, oh, it just sounds like he was inventorying it, basically.
Oh, I didn't catch that at
all. Yeah, like they were just inventorying the meteors on the Earth or something. I don't know.
Or maybe that was his like prized possession.
Oh, true.
Part of his home.
But he brought it back still, though, for all of the, you know, tourists to enjoy.
Honestly, the nicest alien I've seen in a movie in a long time.
I'm just going to say, at national parks, you're not allowed to take rocks, so he kind of broke, like, the law.
True, but the law wouldn't really apply to him, considering he's an extraterrestrial.
Does the law only apply to people on the planet?
Well, I mean, yeah, you probably wouldn't have, like, Miranda rights, is what I'm saying.
Are you saying that, like, if you go to another country and you break the law, it still applies to you even though you're not from that country? Why is that any different for an alien?
Well, I'm just saying, like, there would be extenuating circumstances.
Such as? He's an alien? That's racist.
Look.
You have nothing to say,
do you? He was illegal. He was an illegal alien.
Whenever you say look, I know that you don't know
whenever
what to say.
Whenever you say whatever, it means I'm right. That is a fact.
What?
Yes.
Whatever. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so at this point, they keep going between, like, the play story and the actual play, and I honestly did not care for the parts
that were
of
in
them,
real
like,
life.
Putting on the play production, the black and white bits. I thought they were boring.
Also,
I didn't enjoy
the
them.
Adrian Brody's relationship with Jason Schwartzman, like, I didn't really catch on to that. Why did that need to happen?
Why did they kiss?
That was, I mean, no, like, I don't have a problem with it, but I just don't feel like it added a lot to the story.
I guess it was kind of like showing you, like, kind of, I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know either.
I don't know. Just, maybe because, you know, the writer of the play is very, you know, passionate, and he saw this guy doing such an amazing job bringing this character to life, and it made him,
like,
them passionate for each other, you know? Like,
you know,
he was his
say.
Muse for the play, basically.
Yeah. Passion follows you.
What? Oh, passion follows you.
It's pretty deep.
Me specifically, or do they say that about everybody? Can you say that to anyone?
It's only you.
You're going crazy today.
Considering
what?
Myself very lucky.
You are crazy. Okay. Yeah, so I honestly don't feel like talking about all those parts because they were boring. So, like, if you want to watch them, go watch them. But just know that those parts are boring. So there is a part, though. There's one part that I liked. So the actor, Augie, whoever Augie's actor was.
Jason
they show
Schwartzman.
they show him in the real world portion, the black and white portion, like, storming off the stage. And he's like, I don't understand this role. I don't understand why Augie is acting this way. I don't know how to act like that character. And if I don't understand why the character is doing what he's doing. And basically the producer of the play was like, shut up and do your job, pretty much. And
pretty realistic.
So Augie is all distraught and he goes out on the balcony. And when he's on the balcony, he runs into Margot Robbie, who was supposed to play his wife, but obviously the wife died and they cut out the wife's scene. So she is kind of just another actor there, and she's doing a play across the way, but she's also on their the balcony across the way, smoking a cigarette, taking a break.
It's very reminiscent of Midge and Augie.
Oh my God, that's so true. Yeah. Yeah. Because, like, that is so smart. I didn't even think about that.
I didn't think
that.
About it until right now.
That's, yeah, you're genius. Midge and Augie spoke to each other between their windows. And him and supposedly the actress that was going to play his wife spoke to each other across the windows. That's so sweet. Yeah, that's true. And so I really, this was one part where I really commended the movie, because Margot Robbie basically just stood over there and she was reciting the lines she would have said if she had been able to play the wife, if the scene hadn't have been cut.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so emotional. Like,
yeah, I do remember that.
That's
part
where I teared up. I was like, how did she literally, she is an actor playing an actor, doing the lines, not even like showing the moment or acting out the scene. She's just saying the lines, literally. And it's so emotional. It was so well done.
It was well done.
It was so good. I was like, oh my gosh. It literally, in the play portion of the movie, it made you relate to those characters more because you didn't even need to see the wife or experience the wife, because Margot Robbie kind of told you it all. And then when you go back to the characters in the play, when they cut to the colored parts in the play, you have that emotional connection.
You carry that over. Yeah.
Yeah. So it kind of like linked their lives
that
in
is,
real
yeah.
life to the play.
That's a good
in
point.
A good way. That was cool. That was the one part of the movie that I was like, that was really well done. It was very genius to do that. So I did really like that part. And good job, Margot Robbie. And also, did you know that she can actually control her tears like she did in Babylon?
Yeah, I did know that.
She can like literally drop it when you want her to drop it and pick what eye you want it to come out
that
of.
That is like incredibly helpful for an actor. Like,
yeah.
You don't have to use like eye drops or anything. You can just
And it makes the crying seem so much more real. Like you can tell when someone has eye drops or like fake tears on their face. I hate it.
Yeah, you can tell. That's true. So did Daniel Kaluuya in Nope.
He can do that with his tears too.
Get Out, I think so.
I love him.
In his audition.
He is such a good actor.
He got like the perfect two tears at the same time.
And so they wanted to do it in the movie too.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know if he can naturally. Yeah, he did that part naturally. I don't know if he can do it on command like Margot Robbie, but I thought that was cool.
He's awesome. I love him. So basically then the director of the play in the real world portion of the movie dies. I don't really know what the relevance was of that. I guess this was his life's work and he died and nobody cared or something. I don't know.
Yikes.
Yeah. And then they cut back to the play portion, the colored bit, and they do the epilogue. Augie and his family end up being the last people to leave Asteroid City after the quarantine is up. You could tell he was heartbroken because Midge left without saying goodbye. All of the other families like had revolted when they were told they weren't going to be able to leave.
But she left him her address.
Yeah, but she left him her address. So then I'm assuming they probably dated, fell in love, and had lots of babies, even though he already has a lot of babies.
Nick Cannon it, you know?
Yeah, Nick Cannon it, basically. But Woodrow, Augie's son, wins some money. And Augie and his family drive away. And that's the end of the movie.
Also, I really liked all the little scene 3 through.
Oh my gosh,
six.
Yeah. They had these little like this seemed like I don't know what you call them, PowerPoint presentation slides is almost what it felt like. But it was like a title screen for like each act of the play, which kind of like brought you back to like, oh, this is like a play. You're following through the play. And I also like how they made the set look like a set. Like a play set.
Yes, yeah.
I really liked that. I thought that was really good on their part, too.
I would love to visit the Wes Anderson set.
I feel like it's so interesting. That was probably all on the same set, like all one set there, mm-hmm. that they filmed it on. I thought it was so cool.
I think they filmed it in Spain, I think.
Oh, they really filmed it outside? I thought they just filmed it on a set.
No, I don't know if it was outside or not. But it was in Spain.
Oh, interesting.
I think.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I don't know. Overall, I loved it. I love Wes Anderson. I'm glad that he is improving his movies without getting too niche. Some people tend to do that.
Did you see Isle of Dogs? I haven't seen that.
Oh my gosh. Isle of Dogs, they advertised it so much. I saw those ads for like a year every time I went to the movies. That's true. I got to a point where I hated the ads so much that I didn't want to see the movie. So I have not seen the movie. I'm pretty sure Carly really liked it though.
I know my sister Caitlin really likes that movie too.
Maybe we should watch it. I'm still scarred from how much they advertised it.
They did
too much.
Advertise it a lot.
Yeah.
And it's also like a play on words. If you say it too fast, it like you say I love dogs.
I love dogs. Oh, I do love dogs though.
Yeah.
I love dogs. Beans.
She's fast asleep.
Oh, you woke her up. Okay, Jonathan, so what movie are we doing next week?
Destiny Arrives. Yes, the Dial of Destiny. The
Indiana Jones
movie.
The new movie. I have heard some bad things from you specifically.
I've heard some good things from me specifically.
What are you talking about?
I've heard some good things. I've heard some bad things. Okay. You know, mix and mash. And
I'm pretty sure Carly was telling me that. Harrison Ford said that he will never let anybody else play Indiana Jones and that the role will die with him.
Why should he?
He shouldn't. He's just made for it. It is a role made for Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
Which is funny because he was like, come on, man, I want to be out of Star Wars. But then he's like, nobody else can play Indiana Jones.
Yeah, that's very true.
It's funny. That role must be very close to his heart.
Yeah, well, he did that before Han Solo, too. And yeah. that was kind of the role that I could be wrong, actually. He was probably a big movie star before then. I don't remember.
I don't know what his big start was, but I'm going to go eat some ice cream, everybody.
It was Apocalypse Now. That's what it was.
Sorry. So happy that you remembered that.
Me too.
Well, I think it's time to end the podcast.
Okay. Yeah, we can end it.
We'll see you guys next time. Bye.
Bye.